Traditional revenue sources for public media and media at large are declining this year, and we at Marketplace are not immune to those trends. We're currently tracking behind target for this budget year. We're tightening up our expenses, yes, but the need for trusted, grounded, fact-based reporting is as pressing as ever, and we simply cannot cut back on our mission. So we're turning to the listeners like you. Please step up now and invest in Marketplace. If you haven't given yet, now's the time. Go to marketplace.org/donate.
Life sustains itself by cell division. So does cancer. Breast cancer cells multiply faster because of CDK4/6 proteins. But what if we could block those proteins and stop runaway cell division? To that end, Dana-Farber scientists laid the foundation for CDK4/6 inhibitors, new drugs that are increasing the survival rate for many advanced breast cancers. Dana-Farber's momentum of discovery keeps finding new ways to outmaneuver cancer. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Today on the show, Social Security, corporate earnings, and holiday shopping with all the joy and fighting it brings. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Rima Reis, in for Kai Rizdal. It is Monday, October 10th. Good to have you along. So the theme for today's show, you could say it's a bit of a look ahead, kind of economic calendar for what we can expect this week. For starters, we'll get a snapshot of inflation on Thursday by way of the new consumer price index numbers for September. And then we'll also learn next year's cost of living adjustment for Social Security, which for millions of Americans is a big deal. It's calculated by how much prices went up between the third quarter of the previous year and the third quarter of the current year. Last year, the cost of living increase was 5.9% for 2022. And as Marketplace's Samantha Fields reports, adjustment for next year will be the biggest increase in more than 40 years.
Even with inflation, John Murray says he's getting by just fine on the $16.50 a month he gets from Social Security.
I can't really say I've noticed inflation. I live, pretty simple. And it's easy to control your cost when it's just one person.
Murray's 73. He lives in Dawsonville, Georgia, and he's been retired for a while now. He says he knows he's been lucky. His landlord hasn't raised his rent this year, and he's healthy. These days, he mostly just spends money on food, a couple of prescriptions, and occasionally some treats for his grandkids.
But there's not anything extra. So if I had an emergency or something, it would be very difficult.
The thing he isn't able to do these days is save money, but he's hoping that come January, he'll be able to. That's when everyone on Social Security will get a big bump, likely almost 9%.
That's hugely significant. We know that prices have been rising, particularly food, gas, housing, and this will really help people from falling further behind.
David Sertner at AARP says last year's increase, 5.9%, was the biggest in 40 years, but it wasn't enough to keep up with rising prices this year. So people have fallen behind.
But I think what's important is that over time, the cost of living adjustment does a pretty good job keeping up with prices.
The fact that Social Security has an annual cost of living adjustment is critical, Sertner says. Without it,
what would happen is that people's retirement income would erode dramatically over time.
About 40% of retirees rely on Social Security for half or more of their income.
And that means half your income is adjusted for inflation. And that's really important.
Alicia Minnell at the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College says Social Security is actually the only major source of income that is fully adjusted for inflation, if with a bit of a lag.
Wages aren't keeping up with prices. Asset returns certainly aren't keeping up with prices. And so the elderly are particularly protected against inflation.
An extra 8 or 9% will make a difference for many people on Social Security.
But it's hard when people have to wait for the increases to show up in their benefits.
Kate Lang is at the nonprofit Justice in Aging.
People are dealing with increased costs, right? That's not free money. That's money that they need to pay for their basic living expenses.
And even though overall inflation has been around 8%, food, rent, and energy bills have gone up much more than that. In Spokane, Washington, Sandra Westrand says her rent has gone up 38% in the last year, from less than $900 to more than $1,200.
My rent is literally almost my entire Social Security check. There's like $26 left afterwards.
Westrand is also 73, and she's raising her 10-year-old grandson on her own. She retired from her job at Costco in 2015 when he came to live with her, and she couldn't find affordable childcare. Now, with inflation,
it's hard. We have to budget every penny.
Westrand is holding off on buying her grandson new shoes that he needs, and she's cut back on groceries.
I don't buy nearly as much stuff as I did. We're using more frozen vegetables instead of fresh. We use more hamburger, cheaper cuts of meat.
And she's worried that things are just going to keep going up.
My Medicare supplement is going up. My deductible is going up. My Part D for prescriptions is going up. My power has gone up. My rent will increase too.
And she says that's going to more than eat up the increase she'll get in her Social Security checks next year. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, kind of a down day to start the week. Details when we do the numbers. All right, continuing with what's to come this week, we're going to get a lot of third quarter earnings. Among the companies on deck are big banks like Wells Fargo, JP Morgan, Citigroup, Morgan Stanley. We'll also hear from some consumer-driven businesses like Pepsi, Delta, Walgreens. Marketplace's Kristen Schwab reports on what clues Wall Street will be looking for in these calls and what they might tell us about where this economy is headed.
Earnings calls aren't known for being a theatrical experience. C-suite executives in monotone voices talking about economic headwinds or wait-and-see periods. Euphemisms that can mean a lot, especially in banking. Shiraz Mian is director of research at Zacks Investment Research.
These are kind of boring financial utilities, but banks touch practically every corner of the economy.
That's why Wall Street, regulators, and the Federal Reserve pay so much attention to them when they report quarterly earnings. Banks have an incredible amount of data on how much everyone's spending and how much is going on credit cards or being borrowed. And hopefully, everyone's borrowing less.
A seemingly negative sign with respect to a bank's results, if they tell us that demand is slacking off, will be a positive for the economy.
A positive because it could mean the Fed's raising of interest rates is working. Earnings reports for consumer-driven businesses can also tell us a lot because consumer spending accounts for 70% of U.S. economic activity. Arun Sundaram is senior equity research at CFRA Research.
Are companies still raising prices? Or are we at a point where the consumer is pushing back enough where the manufacturers and retailers can't raise prices anymore?
And if they can't, how is that affecting business? One key word Sundaram will be listening for is restructuring.
That can mean layoffs.
Now, there are caveats. Ilya Dishif, a professor of accounting at Emory University, says we shouldn't rely too much on what companies are saying because they are sometimes dealing with unique problems. And often, they're just too sunny.
Companies and managers in general tend to be over-optimistic.
He says instead of paying close attention to any one company's earnings, we should zoom out and look at the bigger collective picture. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
So the other day, I was scrolling through my phone, and I remember very distinctly seeing not one, not two, but like several ads for holiday shopping, which, sure, it's October, but also, it's October. The thing is, many retailers are kind of freaking out right now. They were struggling last year with inventory, and now they're facing the complete opposite problem,
They've got too much stuff now that folks aren't spending as freely, which means holiday discounts are coming early this year. Marketplace's Savannah Marr tells us what holiday shopping might look like.
Last year, it was hard to find a good deal on, say, a tablet or an air fryer. Retailers could barely keep that kind of stuff in stock because of the supply chain crisis.
Fast forward to 2022, there has essentially been a turning of the page and almost a flip-flop.
Terry Esper is a professor of logistics at Ohio State University. He says retailers stocked up just as inflation started to squeeze household budgets.
We have to grapple with all that extra buying of inventory, and we're dealing with a consumer that has now changed.
A consumer much more sensitive to prices. If you've got electronics or kitchen gadgets or clothing on your holiday shopping list, you might be in luck, says Vivek Pandia with Adobe Analytics.
Consumers are going to be seeing some of the best discounts they've seen in quite some time.
Discounts that will start early, as soon as this week, and continue into December.
Retailers are spreading out the discounts and consumers are wanting the discounts to be spread out, which is good.
Another shift, Adobe is out with a report finding online holiday shopping won't see the same explosive growth as last year and the year before. And that's showing up in seasonal hiring, says Sinem Buber, lead economist with ZipRecruiter.
We are definitely seeing more positions to support their consumers in-store than online shopping.
A year ago, we preferred the convenience of shopping from our couches. But now?
People are more likely to show up at the stores, leave the convenience of online shopping to get an additional 10% off.
Buber says 2020 and 2021 were anomalous. This year, holiday shopping might look more like it did before the pandemic. I'm Savannah Marr for Marketplace.
Sticking with the topic of holiday shopping, retail sales come out later this week on Friday. That'll give us a better idea of what spending is looking like for both in-store and online. Which brings us to this next piece. Julio Segato Bayon is the owner of ZB Market in St. Louis, Missouri. He's a fair trade retailer, and he shares his story in today's installment of our series, My Economy.
I grew up in Peru. And after graduating college, I came to the United States in 1990. After a couple of decades of corporate jobs, I realized that my values were no longer aligned with the values of those companies. I connected at the time with a fair trade non-for-profit organization. They would sell unique, handcrafted, and ethically sourced products from Peru. And through that relationship, I learned a lot about fair trade. So I kept my full-time job and I launched ZB Market as a part-time type of hobby, if you will, that grew enough to a point where I felt comfortable enough to open the first bricks and mortar store. We currently source from 37 different countries and it spans a category that you would find in most boutiques. We did face some supply challenges in 2020, given that our 95, if not more, percent of what we carry comes from countries located in the global south. And then secondly, we had challenges with shipping. Some of the carriers that would bring products from India to the US or Bangladesh or Kenya or parts in South America became really, really It was very difficult for them to operate. There were crews that were entirely in lockdown. There were vessels that could not leave port because there weren't enough people working. So that was the reason why some of the products that we carry had increases initially. Now that shipping has sort of somewhat normalized, we're beginning to see 10 to 15% changes in some items. We are really giving our customers an opportunity to demand quality, not just in the products they buy, but demand quality in the lives of the people that make those products. And that to me is, it brings me so much joy. And it's just, it is a delightful type of work environment because you know your purchasing power is really a force for positive change.
That was Julio out in Missouri. We can't do this without you, by the way. So you know the drill. Head on over to marketplace.org/myeconomy and let us know what's going on with you. Coming up.
I call her the Grinch.
Oh, so endearing. But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Jones dipped 93 points, 0.3% to close at 29,202. The NASDAQ fell 110 points, just over 1% to finish at 10,542. The S&P 500 was down 27 points, 0.75% to end at 3612. We just heard from Kristen about third quarter earnings coming out this week for several big banks, among them JP Morgan, which was down just under 1%. Citigroup fell 0.33%, and Wells Fargo slipped 0.75%. You might have already heard that the Nobel Prize for Economics was won by a trio of American economists who studied banks and financial crises. They include former Fed Chair Ben Bernanke, who was in charge during the 2008 financial crisis. The three will split this year's monetary prize of 10 million Swedish kroner, which translates to about $885,000. U.S. bond markets were closed today due to the federal holiday. You're listening to Marketplace.
My name is Lee Hawkins. I've been a journalist for over 25 years. On my new podcast, What Happened in Alabama, I get answers to some of the hardest questions about how things came to be for many Black Americans and the truth that must come before any reconciliation can happen. I investigate my family history, my upbringing in Minnesota, and my father's painful nightmares about growing up in Alabama. What Happened in Alabama is a new series confronting the cycles of trauma for myself, my family, and for many Black Americans. Listen now.
Traditional revenue sources for public media and media at large are declining this year, and we at Marketplace are not immune to those trends. We're currently tracking behind target for this budget year. We're tightening up our expenses, yes, but the need for trusted, grounded, fact-based reporting is as pressing as ever, and we simply cannot cut back on our mission. So we're turning to the listeners like you. Please step up now and invest in Marketplace. If you haven't given yet, now's the time. Go to marketplace.org/donate.
This is Marketplace. I'm Rima Khreis. In wake of the Supreme Court overturning Roe v. Wade, some colleges and universities are now trying to provide access to abortion medication themselves. Barnard College recently announced that next fall it'll start offering abortion pills on campus. Over in Massachusetts, the state passed a law requiring its public colleges to provide the medication. And beginning this January, California's public universities will too, but not its community colleges. As Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes reports, distributing the medication requires resources that some schools might not have.
College-age people account for about a third of all abortions in the U.S., according to the Guttmacher Institute. Martha Sanchez, with the nonprofit advocacy group Young Invincibles, says if students don't have access to abortion, they can suffer real economic and personal harm.
It's just another barrier for them to complete their education in some cases. It is a mental health stressor.
Avoiding those harms is exactly why Massachusetts passed its law, says State Representative Lindsay Sabadosa, who sponsored it. The law requires public colleges to either provide abortion medication to students or create a plan for access.
The reason that we went with both is that some of these schools are very tiny institutions and they don't have health services that are open very often.
Most colleges require students to have health insurance, but not all students have policies that cover abortion. In Massachusetts, they'd have to pay for the medication, and that cost can vary. Carrie Ann Baker is a professor of women and gender at Smith College, whose research informed the Massachusetts law.
So the cost of the medication itself is about $54. Providers
charge a wide range of fees?
Up to $600, according to the National Women's Health Network. Baker says by distributing abortion medication, state schools are changing students' expectations of what a college or university can provide.
This is raising the stakes on private colleges, and students are saying, we want this too.
Baker says when abortion medication isn't available on campus, students may have to travel hours to get it. She says that's particularly a burden on low-income students. I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
So I host a podcast here at Marketplace called This is Uncomfortable. And we do this thing on the show every now and then that we call Money Fight, where I talk to two people about one of their most intense or memorable fights around money. And we try to get at the heart of it because, you know, fights about money are rarely ever about the money. Two listeners of the show, a couple, are struggling to see eye to eye when it comes to spending during the holiday season. I chatted with Ayana and Tim Sumner via Zoom from their home in Florida. You can hear their baby making some appearances in the background. Ayana is 37, Tim is 31. They've been married now for a few years, and they told me that last year they got into a fight over their Christmas tree that sounded a lot like this.
It literally touched the ceiling, and I was like, I am going to cut the top of that tree off. How much is that tree? And then I feel like he always kind of like lowballs it, you know, like, oh, it was only $85.
I'm pretty sure it was over $200.
The tree? Are you freaking kidding me?
But the real recurring fight is over gifts. Tim is a gift giver. He says it's his love language, which is why he cannot stop himself from buying the perfect present, even if it's a little pricey. Meanwhile, it's not that Ayana is against giving gifts, but she just feels like Christmas ends up becoming this wild, materialistic expense that they can't actually afford.
I call her the Grinch.
Last Christmas, Tim came to Ayana with a proposal. He said, listen, what if for Christmas I charter a boat for your family?
I know your dad's an avid fisherman, and really everyone in your family likes to fish. This is definitely going to be something that everyone enjoys.
I was like, it is a really good idea, but you're not paying for everybody.
The thing is, Christmas brings up some tough financial memories for Ayana. Growing up, her dad would rail against Christmas. It's all about corporate greed, he'd say. Just big business pushing us to show our love through gifts.
But then I realized, I'm like, you know, what probably happened is he had less money. And so he had to have some story, right? This alibi for why there was no Christmas anymore. So then, you know, I'm regurgitating some of that stuff now.
What's your response hearing that, Tim?
It definitely makes me sad to think what I thought was just a unanimously good time could really trigger a lot of financial anxiety. So, you know, partially, I think it's my mission to try to reverse the curse here.
When it came to that fishing trip, though, the $500 price tag was not pretty. Ayana was at home taking care of their newborn, so the family was living on just one income. And they decided no lavish gifts this year. Case closed. But as the holiday season twinkled on, Tim could not let it go. He knew this trip would be an experience they'd remember for the rest of their lives.
Christmas spirit just got into me. And so I come home and I tell you, I say, hey, you know, we're going on the trip.
Yeah, I booked it.
Yeah, I booked it.
What'd you say, Ayana?
I mean, some expletive. I was upset, but, you know, there was a small, very small amount of excitement under all of the frustration.
And so on the day after Christmas, the whole family gathered at the Gulf of Mexico and made their way onto the boat.
And the captain is like, every time you get a fish, you yell, fish on!
Fish on! Fish on! Yeah, so every single person caught a fish. We took the fish home, we cooked it, we ate it.
It was so good.
Yeah, it was so good.
Despite her objections, Ayana had a great time. That said, their family did struggle to pay some bills in the months after. Their son even had to skip out on his basketball program.
It was about $200 for a new season, and the new season was starting in January. I wasn't able to afford it.
Every year, this recurring fight feels like really a fight over spending priorities and how they express their love. They're going to make this boat trip an annual tradition. But if finances are ever tight, Ayana wants to do what she wishes her dad had done. Show love by making the ordinary feel a little more magical.
Like, this is the blanket that we watch our Christmas movies under every year. You know what I mean? Like, let's make our Christmas popcorn. It's total easy things that don't cost an arm and a leg, you know?
Or, you know, maybe they'll grill up some Christmas fish from Costco and just call it a day. If you want to hear more of our stories, including some money fights, you can check out This Is Uncomfortable wherever you get your podcasts. Our 7th season just started last week, so you should definitely check that out. This final note on the way out today. Earlier in the show, Savannah talked about how retailers are bracing for a kind of holiday season. And so beyond the discounts, another way they're trying to boost sales is by reminding us of the spooky holiday just around the corner. According to CNBC, Party City plans to hire about 20,000 more seasonal employees for Halloween. And stores like Home Depot and Lowe's are going all out too, selling a wider selection of Halloween stuff this year. Apparently, Home Depot just added its tallest decoration yet, a 15-foot towering phantom that goes for $399. Meanwhile, its competitor Lowe's wants you to buy a 12-foot mummy going for about $350. Or, you know, you can just be boring like me, buy some $12 pumpkins, and call it a day. All right, before you go, here's your moment of economic context. It's kind of fun, or kind of disheartening if you're out there dating right now. According to some survey data from LendingTree, about 1 in 5 people say they're going on fewer dates these days because of inflation. Another 14% said they're generally trying to spend less on dates. And you know, when asked how much they'd spend on their first date, survey respondents said they'd spend an average of $91 at most. $91. Anyway, our daily production team includes Anais Amin, Andy Corbin, Richard Cunningham, Nicholas Guillong, Maria Hollenhorst, Sarah Leeson, Sean McHenry, and Daisy Palacios. And I'm Rima Reis. I'll see you tomorrow. This is APM.
My name is Lee Hawkins. I've been a journalist for over 25 years. On my new podcast, What Happened in Alabama, I get answers to some of the hardest questions about how things came to be for many Black Americans and the truth that must come before any reconciliation can happen. I investigate my family history, my upbringing in Minnesota, and my father's painful nightmares about growing up in Alabama. What Happened in Alabama is a new series confronting the cycles of trauma for myself, my family, and for many Black Americans. Listen now.